You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout.
It's the Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles. I still remember
when you used to be. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Today, we're going to talk about, do Western societies promote narcissism? An interesting study from Medical University in Berlin. I'm also going to share all the different alternatives to dairy for those of you who are looking for a way to get off of dairy, but you still like cheese and yogurt and milk and butter. So I'll give you the best of the best alternatives. Also today, we're going to look at how bad is the drought around the world. I'm only going to take one country, Africa. I'm going to take one town, Cape Town, and tell you what's happened to them, because it's going to begin all over the world now, except for some areas. Russia doesn't have to worry about it. Canada doesn't. Most of North America doesn't. But an awful lot of America does. In fact, right now, there are 6 million residents of Texas who are water-stressed. And more than half of Californians are now going to be put into a water crisis. So it's our latest on looking at our environment in a realistic way. Also today, I had a lot of response to the program yesterday with beginning the process of at least once a week to bring on someone who has been an important contributor to a social movement, whether it's a human rights movement or animal rights or the planet, and who's now being targeted. And so you can hear their stories. But more importantly, what can we do about it? And up to this point, everyone's been doing their own thing but not paying attention to what others are doing. And we're bringing all the groups in the world together to fight back. Now, we don't have the control over the media and the governmental agencies and major sections of society, but we do have resources. And I'll explain today how we can do something in a positive way. That's our show. I'm also going to play a segment of just what happens when we do not hold anyone in government accountable for anything they do. They're going to pass it all along to us. So no matter what you feel, the government has its own agenda. It's never held accountable. No one's ever said, hey, you did wrong. We just don't do that. So we should. And I'll show you how we can get started on that. But we always begin with health and healing. And there's an interesting study out of a medical university in Berlin. And they were able to show that people who grew up in the former Western states of Germany have higher levels of narcissism than those associated with socialized, or the socialist movements that took place in the former Eastern states. And life in Western Germany was characterized by a culture of individualism, very similar to the United States. My whole generation, the baby boomers, were based upon individualism. Now, there's positives and negatives to that. I believe that individualism is always going to be apparent in those people like creative, assertive, life energies, and dynamic aggressives. But for the rest, individualism doesn't work. In fact, it places an enormous amount of stress upon the person. This idea, well, we are a free society, so you're free to succeed or free to fail. We're all created equal in our opportunity. It's just not true. You have to look at the circumstances. You have to look at the parents and grandparents. You have to look at the ethnicity and look at the biases and prejudices that are built in, hardwired into our society based upon hiring someone, based upon their conditions and where they stand in the culture. We don't want to acknowledge this, but our institutional racism is palpable. So what if you're one of those people who grew up feeling that you are entitled to succeed without any concern of the consequences to anyone else in society, and if they couldn't succeed equal to your own efforts, something was wrong with them? I want to get a good example of this that the media will not touch. Davos. Davos is the epicenter of collective narcissism, where a couple thousand individuals will get together to talk about the world, and the only thing they have in common, the absolutely only thing, is they're all extremely rich. They made their money in different ways. Some were trust babies who were able to step right in, like Donald Trump. He got $200 million from his father. And I'm willing to bet that Donald Trump today, if you took away all of his expenses, all of his debts, all of the people who financed everything, because he's notorious for wanting everything financed, never paying cash, that he wouldn't have a whole lot more than $200 million. Meaning, where he's at today, at 70, is the same place he was when he was in his 20s. Well, then that doesn't show he's a very bright person or very creative or very original, but very lucky. So all these people at Davos, they are rich, generally billionaires. There are now officially 2,000 billionaires in the world. And they collected 87% of all the profits. The increase in profits in the last 5 years went to them, just to these 2,000 people. And yet we have over 7.5 billion people on the planet. The rest had to share in the remaining small percentage. They all fly in on private jets to be concerned about the environment. Please don't lecture me about why I should be concerned about the environment when I'm doing all I can to live consciously and lower my footprint, having solar panels in my home, my own wells, and growing food organically, and recycling clothes, everything I can do to minimize my carbon footprint. And you fly to a meeting on the major topics of global warming in a private jet, and then you're the one making profits without any concern for the people who made your product that you sell. And if you're from China, which a lot of these billionaires are, why do you think they had to put safety nets outside of Foxconn, one of the largest factories there, where people sleep in crowded dormitories and they're expected to work about 16-hour days because they were committing suicide? So when you're the head of Apple or Bill Gates, would it have cost you anything, Bill, in the quality of your life, to have seen that, A, you don't rage with your excessive temper tantrums and throwing things in spite, in hostility? Yeah, that's from your own workers. What if you had paid them all a good living wage, and the people that sell your product, making sure they get that a living wage, and the people that made your computers in China, they get a living wage, and the environment is kept clean and pure in the process? Would it have impacted you any differently, or the people who are profiting from your products? The answer is no. I mean, we have this clown who's now the richest person in the world, who is got one of the lowest paid groups of employees, and no one seems to connect this absurdity. That's narcissism, where everything is about you, where everyone in your life is there to service you, where the media is there to show you at your best, and not a scintilla of compassion or empathy for those who suffer because of how you make your money. So that's why I don't pay any attention to Davos. They're a bunch of idiots, in my opinion, all of them, no exceptions. If you got a lobotomy, you'd be more compassionate, more humanistic than any human being that's ever attended Davos. These are, in my opinion, the scum of the earth. They are absolutely the wretched because of they care not about how they make the money, just that they make it, and they make lots of it, and they can go to a place with the top security in the world protecting them and fly in on private jets, 1,000 private jets, all to show, why do you need a private jet? Why not take a commercial? So to preen the largest yachts in the world they own, the largest homes in the world they own, yeah, that's narcissism, and that's Western narcissism that's now encroached in every single millimeter of the earth from every culture. So those who can exploit those in their own environment will do so. If you're a ruler, if you're a king, a prince, exploit it. If you're a president, senator, House of Representatives, exploit it. If you're head of a network, exploit it. Head of a movie studio, exploit it. If you're a top actor, do you think I give any credibility to anything anyone says in Hollywood? Not on your life. I know them. They are going to exploit it. Let me just give you one really simple example. Let's say that you're making $20 million a film. Now everyone else wants to make $20 million too. Why not me? Me too, me too, me too, me too, me too. I want that, I want that, I want that. Okay, so your agent says, well, now we got to have, you know, Harrison Ford or Tom Cruise or whoever is the next person up, Tom Hanks. They all got to get $20 million. Now I want $20 million and a percentage of the profits up front, dollar one. Well, I want it too. You know what's missing in this whole scenario? It's not how much money they made on the front end and the back end, but the fact that no one else working on the film shared in that. The second unit director, the grip, the location scout, the costume designer, the set designer. No, they can't say, I want mine too. No, it just goes to the superstar, the narcissist. And guess who's the biggest narcissist? Enabling the narcissist, the agents, the managers. Oh, they're like prima donnas. And so they can handle a director, a writer, the star, and the producer, all from their agency. Well, guess what power they have when they can control the entire film? They have absolute control. So now you see films that are really crappy, that are way beyond what is a reasonable budget. And guess who's left out of this whole scenario? The person wanting to go to a movie but can't afford it. No one ever thought that maybe making so much money, the narcissist who was greedy, and most are, did they ever think about the person that liked to see your film, just can't afford it? Like to buy your watch, can't afford it. Boy, what a nice car. Is that only for rich people? Yeah, and you're not one. Wow, that Louis Vuitton bag. Wow, what does it cost to actually make that bag? $100? So why are you selling it $4,000? Because people are willing to pay for it? I'll give you a little side story. I'm lecturing in for our sister station KPFK in Los Angeles, where I was for 33 years till I decided to quit because of how much I saw going on that I will not repeat now. In any case, I had the afternoon free, so I walked over to walk down Rodeo Drive. I wanted to see what things were selling for. Plus, they also have one of those juice places, and you can make your own juice, and I get this huge apple and orange juice. So I'm walking down, looking in windows. I'm seeing a little frame, a picture frame, diamonds set a picture frame for like $60,000. I said, who needs diamonds on a picture frame? I guess when you're so superficial and you're so vacuous and you're so empty of anything of substance, you need to replace it with something that's gaudy and that looks like Wayne Newton's hairdo. Liberace would be considered conservative in his dress compared, even if he was wearing a 22-foot chinchilla on stage at rock at a Radio City Music Hall. That I actually saw. He was a great performer, by the way. Very charismatic. But they're even more outlandish there. Every single person has either a butt lift, a breast lift, a face lift, a cheek lift. It looks like someone took a forklift and overdid it on their body, really ugly. And no one's out in the middle of the day because her body would melt from so much silicone. In any case, I go by this store, and there's a beautiful suit, really nice. So I walk in, and I ask the guy, I said, how much is this? And first of all, it's like I insulted him. Like, you're not supposed to ask the price. You're just supposed to not care. If you got to ask the price, you can't afford it. That's the way it works. So I said, well, how much is it? He said, what, $5,000? I said, $5,000. I said, it's a beautiful suit. He said, of course it is. And I said, I tried it on, and it was nice. And I said, is this actually made in Italy, or are the buttons sewed and the zipper put on in Italy but made in Romania? I just come from Italy, and I came from the Valentino factory there, and I bought up a lot of stuff very inexpensively. And it wasn't because it was just cheap there. It's just that's how much it cost. Really expensive in the United States. So I finally got this conversation with him, and then I got the truth of where it was actually made and how much it actually cost, probably about $100 to make it in actual material and labor. And so I said, well, here's what it's worth to me. So I had some cash, and I handed him $900. I said, now think about this. You're selling to people here who don't care about the cost of anything and know the value of nothing. I look at the cost of everything, and I do never buy anything unless I know it would have value. For me, I'm going to be doing television and some PBS, and this would look nice. And then I give all my stuff away every year, and so someone was going to end up wearing this that probably couldn't afford even the $900. He took it. Yeah. And it's the game that people play of pretense, an image, an illusion everywhere. So someone who's a real narcissist can walk around and probably leave the price tag on, or at least let everyone know what you actually paid for it. That's the insanity of living in a narcissistic society. And now, coming back to the point, the term narcissism refers to excessive self-love and self-centeredness. And narcissism is only considered a pathological phenomenon if the condition has a negative impact upon the patient, or if he or she develops symptoms of narcissistic personality disorder, which just means that you don't care what you say, what you do, who you impact, as long as you never have to feel bad about the decisions you've made. And that is really disquieting. Interesting that people who came from socialist societies were more empathetic, more conscientious of the impact of what they did and set upon other people. And it was interesting that they had East Germany, West Germany to compare to. Now compare West Germany to New York City, to Los Angeles, to Chicago, to Miami. And you start to realize, wow, what a generation, two generations actually, of unhealthy narcissism. This whole pathological sense of superiority, which goes far beyond what might be considered healthy. Now, self-esteem is important, and we must maintain that. But taking your self-esteem to where you're competing with your self-esteem against others is not healthy. And so that's it. And now we're just getting younger people to believe that narcissism is healthy, and it's not. Just something to think about. From UCLA, a study explains the link between a high cholesterol diet, there's your high meat diet, low in fiber, and colon cancer. And what we're not looking at, and we should, is that, and this was published in Cell Stem Cell, is that when you're having a high cholesterol diet, you're generally having high dairy, high meat, or chicken, eggs, and low fruit and vegetable, low fiber. And that contributes to colorectal cancer. So the people in this audience I know are on a healthier diet, lower cholesterol, and healthy intestines. In fact, some people complain, Gary, I'm going to the bathroom two, sometimes three times a day. I'm saying, good. The rule for a healthy intestine, for every meal you eat, you should eliminate the residual dead cells, bacteria, good bacteria, and undigested fibrous, the oligocellulose, from your previous meal. That's an ideally healthy intestine. You eat a meal, you pass a meal. I had someone ask me about air fresheners. The best air freshener I know is made from citrus. There are different companies make it. It's called an air therapy. Comes in orange or lemon or lime. All good. You walk around a room and you spray it up in the air. Maybe 20 sprays. Then all these little oil droplets disperse, and when they come down, they land on all the surface areas and immediately start killing bacteria and viruses. In fact, I have school teachers that will go in and spray every desk with air therapy and the room's air, and they never get sick. Other teachers who don't do anything as far as sanitizing the room do get sick. And by the way, do you know the cleanest schools in the world? Japan. The Japanese children are custodians of their schools. They go in, they have to clean all the hallways and the desks and the chairs. They're very high conscious level of hygiene. Then they make the food for the children. The children make the meals, and they make healthy meals. Nori rolls and seaweed salads and grains and root vegetables. They're little master chefs, and they clean up after themselves also. And their bathrooms are sanitized throughout the day, and they have bidets. Could you imagine in America bidet? Kids would be thinking it's a water fountain and drinking out of it. I mean, the average American has never seen a bidet. What the hell is that? It's squirting water at me. Am I supposed to drink that? So Americans go to hotel room to see a bidet. They start thinking that's a new way to make their coffee. We're just not into hygiene. We're a nation of wipers, not washers. And boy, do we cause a problem with bacteria for that. So anyhow, the Japanese are the cleanest in their schools. But all your school teachers walk around a room and spray air therapy. But in your own home, in your car, always spray air therapy in the vents of your air conditioning. Because when the air conditioner is off, it's creating massive amounts of bacteria. This way it won't. And you can get rid of airborne toxicants, smoke, particulate matter. So we need to have natural air therapies, but stay away from all these scented ones, because those scented ones have lots of chemicals. These are very toxic chemicals. In fact, people are not generally aware that the inside of their home can be 100 times more toxic than outside air. And so they want that so-called freshness. Well, I just showed you how to get that. But unfortunately, people use these VOCs, volatile organic compounds, and they get released in gaseous or particulate form, and furniture, paints, varnishes, carpets, cleaning materials from your dry cleaner, unless you get it organic done, all of those. But one of the biggest are air fresheners. These air fresheners use these hazardous chemicals, and there's about 180 known toxicants that can end up in your environment, and a lot of these are carcinogenic. So don't buy those air synthetic fresheners, because they're not freshening the air. They're just disguising with a toxic brew what was already a toxic brew. All right? And by the way, how toxic? Formaldehyde, benzene, toluene, styrene, phthalates. They're all in our air, so we don't want that. And I promised I'd tell you something about the non-dairy substitutes, because a lot of people are now getting off milk, which is very good. Milk allergies are very common, and so soy milk is with organically grown soy or soy protein isolates, and it's good. Wouldn't be my first choice. Doesn't have a lot of calories. But does have good amounts of protein, about 9 grams protein per serving. That's good. Almond milk is good also. And almond milk is made with either whole almonds or almond butter and water. And it's healthier than soy milk, in my opinion. And frequently it's fortified with vitamin E and sometimes omega-3 fatty acids. But more healthy would be coconut milk. It's just made with a white flesh of brown coconuts. And it contains, alongside the milk and some water, it contains a lot of phytonutrients and really healthy fats. So that would be right up there. But you also have oat milk. In its simplest form, oat milk is made from a mixture of oats and water. It's that simple. Now, they might add it something else, but it's not needed. And then rice milk, and that's probably the most popular. It's made from milled, it should be milled brown rice, though it can be made with white rice. And it often contains thickeners and to improve its texture or taste. And you got to shake it. All these milks you got to shake, because otherwise water separates. It's lighter and comes to the top. And then people think, oh, what's that? Well, that's because you didn't shake it. But it's really good for people who have intolerances to dairy, gluten, soy, and nuts. And it has a mild taste. And get the unsweetened type. And get one that's fortified also. And then cashew milk is made from a mixture of cashews and cashew butter and water. It's good. Very good fats in it. And macadamia milk is probably the most tasty of them all. And it's very, very rich, outstanding, and you can use it as well. And then hemp milk, H-A-M-P, hemp. It's made from the seeds of the hemp plant. And this is the same species used to make the drug cannabis. But unlike marijuana, hemp seeds contain only traces of the THC, the chemical responsible for marijuana's mind-altering effects. You get none of that in the hemp milk. And it's generally just that in water. They can add some omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin C, vitamin A. They can spruce it up, so it's really full spectrum. And it does have a lot of protein, but not like soy. It generally gives you about 3 grams of high-quality complete protein with the essential amino acids. And then quinoa milk is the latest one. So those are your natural milks. And you can always add a little Manuka honey. Get the unsweetened, add it yourself. You can always add some drops of B12. So that way you're getting your B12. Generally put about 500 micrograms in a glass. So then you don't have to worry about milk. Okay? That's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're 27 minutes into our program. I'm going to take a brief break and come back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. A couple of thoughts before we go to an audio clip about how much money our legislators knowingly spend and waste so that they can keep the votes coming in from the people who are working in these military-industrial complex factories. Now, this is narcissism also. They're making weapons of mass destruction. Whether it's landmines, and we never signed the treaty. Clinton wouldn't sign the treaty, Bush wouldn't sign the treaty, and Obama wouldn't sign the treaty to get us out of manufacturing landmines and picking them up around the world where we have put them, causing about 10,000 people to die each year and a lot more to be losing limbs. So what does it say about those people who say, yeah, jobs? Okay, what kind of jobs? Jobs that are reforesting states? Great. Jobs that are helping people get off of factory farming and start doing the old, it wasn't actually 40 acres in a mule, it was more like over 120 acres, and getting people out of urban areas that are oversaturated with people and getting them back into rural life, supplying a wide variety of organic foods which can help feed the world. No. All the good things we could be spending our money on, and we're not. We're spending it through the military-industrial complex. And that's huge. And that's why they were interested in supporting people, whether it was Reagan or Bush, Obama or Clinton again, and for that matter, Trump. They didn't care who was president as long as the contracts were never questioned and we kept banging the drums for war. So that's something to consider. And in this audio clip, you'll hear that. But before we go there, I'm going to give you an example of what happens when you take on a particular cause. I'll use myself as an example today. I was the first journalist in the United States to write an in-depth investigative reporting piece on AIDS. Initially, I was extremely supportive of all the efforts. I would attend lectures downtown for groups, the gay groups and AIDS groups. And I had been working on AIDS, but before it was called AIDS, with one of the leading gay physicians in the New York area, Dr. Stephen Chiesa. He had heard from some of his patients who were seeing me that the conditions he was working with, he wasn't able to reverse. He was a specialist in syphilis, and he had a special therapy where he could kill the spirochete with an aqueous vitamin A, very high doses. And it was very innovative. No one else was doing it before him, and he deserves that credit. So we met, and he said, I'd like to send you a bunch of my patients, mainly men, but some women, who have these conditions that we don't know what's causing them. And so it didn't take long to find out that it was the lifestyle. So I put them on a healthy lifestyle, and they reversed their conditions, every single one. And over the years, I helped hundreds and hundreds of his patients. So for 10 years, before AIDS, 1984, was officially proclaimed as the probable cause of AIDS at a press conference at a restaurant in Bethesda, Maryland, with Ms. Heckler, who was head of our Health and Human Services, and Robert Gallo, who had just come back from trying to patent or patenting the antibody test. Most people are not aware that he's the one who owns that. And in any case, I started seeing a lot of people who were getting sick over the next couple of years using AZT. So I was giving them a protocol when their symptoms were really bad and they were not getting better. In fact, several of them had their partners who were also taking it with them die, and they were dying, and they came and we got them their whole immune system cleaned up, and not with your normal protocol. These were extremely high levels. In fact, to test how safe these would be, I used myself as a guinea pig. I was taking 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenous per day, 6 days a week for over a year, and measuring my blood chemistry and my whole immune system in response every 6 days before I let anyone try it. But that's what reversed their AIDS. It took a long time, but we were helping people. So I decided then to do a documentary. And the documentary was called AIDS, the Real Heroes. And in it, all I did was I interviewed a group of people who had different therapies. Only two of the people in there were using my therapy, and all the rest were other people, all walks of life. There was a psychologist in there. And if you watch carefully, it says HIV infected, HIV infected, under every single caption. And they tell their stories. I did not give any of my opinions at all in the film. They were talking about what it was like, the stigma of being diagnosed with AIDS. And even when you had no symptoms, when you're completely healthy, as one person from ACT UP was completely healthy, but how nobody would go near him, and he wasn't allowed to bring food to a covered dish dinner. You'll hear his story. It's very heart-wrenching. In any case, many of them talked about having AZT and how sick they got. All of them were on AZT, by the way. But after being that sick, they had to get off of it. And I believe everyone but one person there in that whole film was off of it, and how they were making progress. They were talking about the philosophy of living with AIDS, the physiology of living with AIDS, the reality of AIDS. Now, I would then do an article, the longest article ever published in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Physicians, or Physicians and Patients. And it was about healing AIDS naturally. And it talked about how you could reduce viral replication, HIV replication, using quercetin. In fact, at the time, the person doing the most important research in the world on reducing viral load and killing the HIV virus was Dr. Rawala at the Linus Pauling Institute. And we had a conversation, and I was friends with Linus Pauling, and he said, talk with this man. He's getting great results in the lab. And indeed, quercetin, the nutrient you hear me talk about a lot, was able to kill the HIV virus. So then I started really upping the amount of quercetin. We're talking about, I won't tell you the amount, but it was large amounts throughout the day people were taking. And within 16 months, of the small group of people, of 1,200 people I was working with, full-blown AIDS, 12 of them decided to go on an extensive protocol, which was 4 hours a day, 6 days a week, for 16 months. By the way, I paid for all of it, every penny. No one paid a nickel. And so they reversed their AIDS completely. All their tests showed it. And that's when some people came around. Interesting, only African-Americans came around. Stokely Carmichael and came around, and Bill Tatum, publisher of the Amsterdam News, came around. And the people from Tony Brown's Journal came around. And Arthur Ashe came night after night after night. He'd be there looking at patient records with a patient, talking. I mean, we must have had 50 people. And a guy from the Nation of Islam was there also talking. And there was a leading African-American physician from Harlem who'd come down once or twice a week after her long day and talk with patients. So then I was invited on Tony Brown's Journal on PBS. And the people went with me. And this was over a two-year period. 8 of the people appeared telling their story. Now, Tony Brown is a really smart dude. And he had sent his research people in. They had gotten all their records, verified it, all the blood chemistry, histology, every possible test you could take to prove they no longer had any diseases, nor were they HIV infected any longer. He did before he invited me on with them. And I held a press conference. And we invited, in fact, David Paterson would be there, along with a group of scientists who had spent 6 months reviewing the case histories of 100 people from around the United States who had full-blown AIDS, but now were in stages of recovery, including complete reversal. We sent 7,000 invitations out to every AIDS organization and media in the United States 3 times. Not a single person showed up. Not one. Not one. But you can see this up on the web. You can see people talking. Each one got up there for 7 hours and gave their story. The next year, I held a symposium where I brought in from around the world leading scientists from China, Japan, Italy, the United States, and all day long at the largest church I could rent, the second largest, I believe, in New York outside of St. John the Divine, which was not available for rent. It was over on Center Park West. And we started in the morning, and we went all day, late night, and it is packed. We counted 1,700 people coming throughout the day and the evening, one speaker after another after another after another. And it was entitled, Age is Not a Death Sentence, Natural Approaches. And it was at that point that I gave everyone in attendance a 160-some-page report that I had done on natural approaches using homeopathy and everything, plants from around the world that would kill the HIV virus and encourage the immune system to be healthy. Photographs of that conference are up there. I wrote a textbook on it called AIDS, a Second Opinion. The largest chapter in the book was natural approaches to AIDS. I would go on to write about 14 articles on approaches to AIDS using natural non-toxic methods. Instead of this being embraced by the AIDS community, it was attacked. They started to say, oh, Gary Nall is an AIDS denialist. How is that possible? I'm curing more people than any human being in history of AIDS. They've cured no one, not a single person. I have, and it's documented, fully proof, press conferences, everything you could do, written articles, and have every night, 7 nights a week, from 5 o'clock in the evening till midnight, working with those people in the Tri-State Healing Center for over 15 years. How do you call someone an AIDS denialist? Well, it's simple. Those were the people who were being paid by Burroughs Wellcome to promote AZT, or were ideologues and were controlling the movement. So then they began to attack gay journalists. Charles Ortlieb, head of New York Native. If you didn't go along with AZT and nothing else, you couldn't talk about eating a banana if you didn't say AZT. And then they would demonstrate and they would attack. And that was the first of how I saw the deep state really working, that No journalist, no one who read about what they were saying would come to disprove it. They would simply accept it as a given because why would they lie? Well, how about $800 billion? $800 billion. Let me repeat that. More money has been gone to AIDS than cancer and heart disease combined. So they controlled it all. And about 300,000 people died in the United States taking AZT. To me, that is a crime against humanity. But not a single media would write a single word in criticism of orthodoxy because it wasn't politically correct. They controlled the dialogue. They controlled the New York Times and those people who call themselves journalists. I don't even consider CNN anything other than a propaganda machine. But no place could you get that message out, except on my radio program. So the African American community was fully up and aware of this. In fact, you didn't know this. I was invited to give a lecture up at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, and I did. And I got out of the cab, and there's this long line going down the block. So I walked over. He says, "Who's this for?" He says, "You." I said, "Me." I looked around the corner. I walked around the block. It went clear around the entire block up on 125th Street. But when I went in the theater, it was completely packed. I had to be lecturing every day of that week. And when I get into lecture, I didn't know who was going to introduce me, but you talk about something funny. It was the Nation of Islam. They had all these color guard people up there, you know, like standing at attention, all this. I didn't know any of this. And they were introducing different African-American physicians. And finally, I was in Arthur Ashe, who was there, and I was invited up to talk. And I gave my talk and thanked everyone for being there. And on my way home, I'm thinking, isn't it ironic that I don't see anyone within the religious communities, except the Nation of Islam, who's interested in promoting natural approaches to dealing with AIDS and talking about the politics of it? So it's just one of those little ironies that I see in my life. So it was big in the African American community, the natural approaches, but nowhere else. It was just AZT and the other drugs. And that's what it is today, the drugs. So what I've done is this. I want everyone in this audience to become a part of the pushback. Because what they'll do, they'll put anything they can to attack me, and anyone else, by the way, up on Wikipedia. And then that discredits you. To anyone who doesn't know you, know the truth, or looking for the truth. Now, who else do they discredit up on Wikipedia? Every single person who's doing anything that challenges Big Pharma, the government, or anyone making a profit off of disease, every single one in the health movement is up there, and you cannot get yourself off. That's about to change. I won't go into it further, but I'll just let you know that we're about to challenge Wikipedia. I'll just say that. You'll see it when I have my press conference in the near future. In any case, this is a part of the fake news, controlling the message, using the media to take anyone who's doing something good and positive and destroying them. Now, if I worked for a major corporation, if I worked for ABC, I'd have been fired. But I did work for ABC. I even did programs on AIDS and natural approaches on ABC. That was for 12 years on ABC Radio. And WABC. And yet today, you could never say anything except drugs are good. All drugs are good. No matter how much you take, they're good. You can't be critical of the pharmaceutical industry on any level at all. So this is Big Pharma. These are the intelligence agencies. This is the National Institutes of Health. These are all the people working together at the level of the political appointees, the high-level technocrats who control what medicine should be, and anyone who does anything that challenges it has to be excoriated. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to PRN.FM, PRN, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And when you go there today, you're going to see up in the corner, you just click PRN.FM, and you'll see there is and I'm going to walk you right through it now because I want you to watch the documentaries. They're free. It's a public service. Plus, I want you to read the articles. All right? So here we go. we scroll down and all these, the first thing you see is Deadly Deception. That's my new vaccine film. Free, watch it, share it. Then you'll see Gary's Special Investigations and Abuses in Mental Health. You can be up to date on that. Vaccine, 41 articles on vaccines. But then down at the bottom, Gary Nall's Healing Aids Naturally. You click it and you'll see the document. It's only 58 minutes long. You'll see that I do not say HIV doesn't exist. I don't say that AIDS is a myth. I'm supporting people with HIV infection and AIDS, and I so designate it in the film itself. And then the article supporting helping people and press conferences and photographs. Everything I just said, you can see. It's there. It's real. But the New York Times won't touch that. CNN won't touch it. Nobody in the media will touch it, not even on Pacifica where they touch, because that would then put to lie the official cover-up. Because as long as they control the narrative, they control the therapy. When they control the therapy, they control the lives of millions of people. And they care only about making profit and protecting their interests and reputations and careers. This is the biggest medical scandal in world history. So now, push back. Push back. Because you have read and seen the truth. This is how we do it. There's no shortcut. You got to take your time, educate yourself, and then you'll see why they've been able to. The progressive movement is the future. You held on to ideology, petty politics, internecine conflict, power grabs, corruption, stealing, lying. Now watch that. Now we're going to go to that clip to give you an idea. And then I'm going to come back and take calls. Our final 5 minutes will be on TalkBack. Call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. It's time that we push back with the truth. We don't control the media. We don't control the body politic. We don't control the banks or any other industry. But we do have the exclusive moniker on truth. They live with lies. And once you lie, you got to keep lying and keep lying and keep lying. When you tell the truth, you can go to sleep at night. Let's become educated, then speak the truth and share it everywhere you can. Now to our film clip on how they're wasting our money and no one seems to give a damn, and then we're going to take your calls. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888.
Fighter toward F-35 Lightning II. It's planned to be America's new advanced fighter jet. The $100 million plane is stealth, can fly at supersonic speeds, and one version can even take off and land vertically. It's one plane designed to replace the aging fleets of the Air Force, Navy, and Marines. It's the jet fighter of the future. But in December, Donald Trump put the entire project in doubt with a single tweet, saying it's too expensive. And Trump's not wrong. The 16-year, $1 trillion project is 7 years late and 70% over budget. But the F-35 is much more than a government purchase, and canceling it is nearly impossible. That's because it's deeply woven into the U.S. government, military, and economy. President Trump, meet the military-industrial complex. So U.S. defense companies make a lot of money. Their best client is the largest military in human history, and they sell their products to other countries too, making the U.S. the largest arms exporter in the world. As a result, they are some of the biggest companies in the world. This all requires a unique relationship with the U.S. government. Not only do defense companies bid on contracts from the Pentagon, but all of their domestic and foreign sales must also be approved by Congress. As a result, these companies try and get as much support in Congress as they can, and they've adopted a pretty smart strategy to do so. One thing every member of Congress can support is jobs in their home state. So major U.S. defense companies spread their operations across as many states as possible. By doing so, they can maximize the number of legislators inclined to support their projects, regardless of political party. I did a quick search and found just a small portion of Boeing and Raytheon locations across the U.S., along with legislators who voice support for these companies in Congress. Now, if you include subcontractors, like the 3,000 hired by Boeing in California, you can imagine how many jobs are at stake across the country. This strategy is called political engineering, and defense companies have gotten pretty good at it. In August 2015, Lockheed Martin purchased Sikorsky Aircraft, known for making the iconic Marine One helicopter used by American presidents. That brought the company into the lucrative defense helicopter market. It was a smart business move, but a smarter political one. See, Sikorsky Aircraft is based in Connecticut, and the Northeast is one area where Lockheed had little political influence. Rivals General Dynamics, United Technologies, and Raytheon were the area's major defense employers, and therefore wielded the most support in Congress. But Sikorsky has 8,000 employees, and Lockheed instantly became the third largest contractor in Connecticut, and gained the political influence that comes with it. The Northeast is home to some of the defense industry's most vocal supporters in Congress, like Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, who wants Sikorsky to build the next Marine One in her own district. There's no doubt political engineering is a smart strategy. Defense companies get more business and more jobs are created in America. But with so much political support and widespread economic impact, some of these defense companies have been deemed too big to fail, even when they appear to be failing. Now back to that F-35 project Trump threatened to cancel. Despite deep design flaws and constant problems, there have been no serious efforts to cancel or scale back the project. In fact, through more than 3 years of cuts to defense spending, funding for the F-35 has barely been touched. That's because the project was politically engineered to near perfection. The Pentagon started bidding for the F-35 in the mid-90s. It would be the largest defense contract in history, and Boeing and Lockheed Martin quickly emerged as the two contenders. Both had loyal supporters in Congress who were very eager to create jobs in their state. It was an intense competition, and when Lockheed won the contract, Boeing supporters quickly mobilized in Congress. Immediately, they drafted legislation proposing to split the work between the two companies. When that failed, they pushed to award Boeing contracts for KC-767 tankers, C-17 cargo planes, and radar jamming Growler planes, ensuring the Boeing factories in their states remained open. Today, the Lockheed Martin F-35 project supports 146,000 jobs across 46 states. In fact, this interactive map is straight from the Lockheed Martin website. Parts for the plane are produced all over the country, maximizing the number of stakeholders and ensuring broad bipartisan support in Congress. Lockheed Martin has also hired subcontractors in 8 other countries to build components for the plane. And several allied countries have placed orders for their own militaries. Anything done to hurt the F-35 project could hurt those relationships. A procedure called concurrency also complicated things. Concurrency is when a product goes into production before all the tests are complete. This is intended to speed up job creation, because the sooner production starts, the sooner jobs are created. So both defense companies and Congress are inclined to strike a deal quickly. But it's a flawed practice that's delayed the F-35 project by 7 years. When testing reveals a problem, planes that have already been built need to be sent back and retrofitted.
The radar, still a problem.
The helmet is too heavy.
Inadequate fusion of sensor information. Shortfalls in the performance of the distributed aperture system.
That is not good.
The autonomics logistics information system and other issues that are classified.
And each military branch is also asking for its own distinct modifications, complicating the entire process.
And it's still inconclusive when the plane will be ready.
But the F-35 has been delayed so long, it's now unclear whether the U.S. military even needs it anymore. America's current enemies in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan don't even have air forces, and the F-35 is far more advanced than anything Russia or China have planned. But despite all of this, the F-35 project keeps moving forward, with enthusiastic support in the U.S. government. In 2010, the Department of Defense allowed Lockheed more time to fix design.
So we'll have more on that. It's just to show you that a weapon system we do not need, but the manufacturers needed it, and the states needed it, but no one asks, what could we have done using that same $1,500,000,000? Think of all the ways that we could have deghettoized America, rebuilt our infrastructure, reforested America. We could have done so much good with that same money instead of just wasting it. Let's say hello to Edwin in Arkansas. Hi, Edwin. Your turn.
Hi. Hi, how are you? Just two things, Gary. One time, I mean, not too long ago, I heard you talk about Aaron Russo. I'm not sure if you're aware that he died shortly after giving that interview to Alex Jones.
I'm familiar with him, yes. I thought he did a brilliant job.
Yes, definitely. And I think I've heard you in the past say HIV does not exist. Do you think it exists now?
No, I did not say HIV does not exist. What okay. I have said is that interviews I've done with many different scientists, including Charles Ortlieb, the publisher of the number one gay magazine for years, New York native, as well as other gay journalists and about 1,000 other scientists, is HIV by itself enough to cause 30 different conditions, including cervical cancer, or does it require cofactors such as lifestyle that could have stimulated the immune system to be self-destructive? That was the question that was raised, not does it exist. Okay? What?
You're not. Do you believe it exists? Or?
Do I believe it exists? Yes, I believe it exists. But do I believe that it is the capable of causing 30 different conditions? That the science is yet to determine in a way that many of us, including over 2,000 scientists who are part of Reappraising AIDS, what I'm looking at is not HIV or AIDS defining illnesses. Those are real. What I'm looking at is the politics, the toxic drugs, the unnecessary deaths, the fraudulent types of testing apparatus that are not a gold standard for HIV by itself. They in fact, 73 different conditions can give you a false positive reading. If you have the measles, herpes, if you have if you had hepatitis, if you've had malaria, you could test positive for HIV, and therefore it is not a gold standard. So it is the politics and the corrupted science within HIV in the AIDS community that many people are challenging. The point is, I've worked with people, helped them reverse their AIDS-defining conditions, and taken them to an HIV-negative position. That should be self-evident of where I stand on this. Okay? Thank you for your call, Edwin. We're out of time, everyone. Remember, watch the film and share it. You'll have the truth, and yet you'll speak with people at some point who are absolutely certain that none of that is true, and yet you've seen it. It's there. If I say I had a press conference that took a year to prepare and find 100 people with full-blown AIDS who are in various states of recovery, then you will see that press conference. They'll deny it even existed. A fear of knowing is the fear of doing. That's what Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt, said. Have a nice day, everyone.